Ladies and gentlemen, today marks a new day for the state of Missouri. For too many years, politics and partisanship have stood in the way of progress, and the people of Missouri, they're tired of it. The only way we'll meet the needs of Missouri families is by working together, putting our shared principles ahead of our political differences. Today, we stop thinking about what should have been, and we start creating the future we all deserve.
Welcome to the fifth and final segment on the 30-year legacy and career of the 55th governor of the state of Missouri, Jay Dinkson. In this, we talked about all sorts of things, from his views on Donald Trump, some of the views on modern communication, his views on some of the people he worked with. I thought it was an interesting segment to see a person whose career has spanned three decades, pre-term limits, post-term limits, contribution limits, no limits, all the different incarnations, up and including to, of course, the most controversial person of our time, Donald Trump. I hope you enjoy this part as much as we've enjoyed bringing it to you. While it's not history, it's very interesting.
Thank you so much for sitting down with our final segment. We'll talk about contemporary politics. And again, thank you for sitting down with us. It's been a really interesting walk through the last 30 years of Missouri political history.
It's been interesting to be in the shoes, too, I'll tell you that.
Let's talk about the...
It hasn't been an exactly straight walk some days.
We've talked about last year. Let's talk about the last year. Donald Trump, you're someone that does travel the state. You know the road to get to East Prairie, and that it doesn't necessarily... There's no direct road to get to Charleston. Donald Trump is somebody that somehow found a way to connect with rural Missouri and win by a huge margin, similar to the margin. You got more votes than anybody in the history of the state of Missouri for governor. He got more votes than anybody in the history of the state of Missouri for president. Did you see it coming?
You can feel it out there, that's for sure. Yeah. from a political professional perspective, I mean, Clinton didn't target the state, didn't do anything. And
would it have helped if she had?
She doesn't have a strong history of being around Missourians.
Would Hillary Clinton showing up in DeSoto help her get more votes in DeSoto or less?
Less.
Yeah.
I think it's actually, my wife thinks she would say fewer.
Well, in Butler County, she got a lot less.
I think I'm right on that one. We'll have to.
you supported her through the primary, right?
It's taken you a year to notice.
Yeah. Yeah. So when you told some folks, and let me just ask you, you said, you thought Donald Trump hit his high water mark. I think a lot of people thought that. He said, once the conventions are over, people realize this is real. We cannot have someone doing and saying the things he's doing and saying and be president of the United States.
You got a McCain quote in here?
There you go.
Or is that Flake?
That's you, yeah. It's and he never stopped. You know, was that being a good soldier, or did you believe people would see through it and vote differently? Maybe not win Missouri, but...
I respect the office. I do not. I do not think he's qualified for the position, and he's showing that more and more every day.
Is he not qualified from a standpoint of running business, or is he not qualified from a standpoint of temperament and judgment?
He's not interested in it. He's not interested in doing the job. Well, qualified for the job is getting up in the morning like I did every morning as governor at 5:30 and read a book, this long briefing book, and run through a day in which you were prepared for the meetings and you were trying to make things better, whether it's a partnership for hope to help disabled kids or whether you were trying to get a grant to fix a road or a bridge or something like that. Or just show respect, or go to 159 public schools, which I did as governor. He's uninterested in the core part of that job, which is to be the head of the government. Like it or not, that is it. He has almost, and I think successful presidents get in and work on it. You can talk about his eccentricities.
But he connected with Missourians.
Yeah, an anti always has it. Demagogues also always have an advantage in elections.
Do you think, I mean, there's been demagogues that have ran for office before that didn't connect with Missourians like he did. He connected in a unique way.
He was running against the weakest candidate in modern history. That helps you connect, number one. Yeah. And number two, he was able to speak in
Bernie Sanders. Does Donald Trump win by 19 against Bernie Sanders?
I think we're a capitalist country, not a socialist country. I'm not a Sanders guy. At all. I think capitalism has made this country, it just jolted us to the lead of the world. It's not because we're taller or better looking or something. We have been able to have a free and open business system here in this country that has led people to be rewarded not only for work but for gaining value, and they're able to keep a piece of what they earn. And plus, I mean, I think it's one of the major problems of the Democratic Party. I think that's why I pulled this out. This is my first day of the state. I had five values I laid out for the state. The first of those, the first one was, first, we believe in the value of a hard day's work. That's the first one. And that's a long way from Trump.
What part of him connected? I mean, he definitely connected in some places where you connected. You always would outrun Democrats in Eastern Jackson County. You'd outrun Democrats in the Budo. You're from Jefferson County.
Electorally, I understand how you won. I understand exactly how you won.
Well, what do you do that connected with people so much bigger? I think if any of those 25 Republicans would have been on the ballot, 24 of them, you probably have Russ Carnahan win, you have Chris Koster win, you have Jason Kander win. One of them won by such a dramatic margin to carry the whole ticket through. What was that quality?
I think people are very, very frustrated economically, and that the economic disruptions going on in this country and in this world right now are scary to people. These young folks don't know what they're going to be doing 10 years from now. They'll certainly grow weary of watching you and I talk and then watch a computer screen. they've got something else in their life they're going to want to do. And so that disruption's got, and if you're a little undereducated or you're in a rural area, it all seems like it's going real fast and you're not sure you're part of where that movement forward is. And the harshness of the tone.
Were you surprised by 19 points though? That's a lot.
Yeah, it got run. It got going pretty.
You're from Jeffco. It's kind of, I think, the epicenter of where that switch made. Folks back home, talking to them, were you surprised by the margin of Jeffco?
No, I thought that would be a place that, yeah. I mean, he's like Trump's like an outspoken Jeff Gordon.
You know what? There's a lot of similarities to that. He could be Rorty could be a speechwriter for him.
Yeah.
So, but it goes on down. The governor of Missouri. There's a tone. I never heard you call the legislature third graders. Never heard you say they were corrupt. I'm sure you had vehement disagreements with them. The person that came in now in this age of Trump, actually, the legislature tries to agree with him. He calls them corrupt and third graders and.
I did something. I remember bringing in the leadership right after the election. I came with the AG's office, Richard, and, Speaker and Pro Tem, Democrat, Republican. And I said, we only got really two rules when you're meeting with me. And I wanted everybody to agree to it. We're not going to yell in meetings. Okay. If somebody starts yelling, you can just leave. I mean, if you're that upset, just leave and come back when you calm down. We're just not going to, as governor of the state, I'm not going to have a meeting with major leaders with people yelling and screaming. We got work to do. We're serious guys. Okay. We got serious things to do. And we're never going to lie to each other. Ever.
Ron Richard told me the first thing when I asked him, when I told him you were degreed to sit down, Jay Nixon never lied to me. Did you benefit, though, from having a guy that is a statesman like Ron Richard to work with, even though he was a Republican?
Ron's a good guy. And he also was one of the, because of some of that relationship, it taught me one of the best lessons I learned as governor. And Ron was wouldn't know he was involved in that, but he was. After my first year as governor, we tried to pass the autism bill the first year. And the surprising thing was how many votes it got in the Senate. Everybody thought it's an insurance mandate. It's not going to be able to pass. It comes up for a vote right near the end in the Senate, and it's like 28-6 for it. And I'm like, man, insurance mandate? I thought the insurance lobby would be more powerful than that. Something real here. Session ends. Didn't get done. At the end of the session, the legislature, the last press conference says, well, you're disappointed. I mentioned that as one of the things I wished it would have got done. So we go back to office, we'll plan out what are we going to do. And somebody said, well, maybe we should go to Joplin and have a press conference at an autism center and light up Richard, who's speaker at the time. Mm-hmm. Say, why didn't you get that bill done? The Senate got it done. Why didn't you get it done? And I thought about it. In fact, I went home and thought about it. And I said, do I want to be a triangulating politician? Or do I want to be somebody who can bring people together? I thought about it. I said, I came back the next day. I said, no, we're not going to do that. I'm going to call Ron. And I talked to him. And he had a some relative, a nephew or something, that was on the spectrum. And he was very passionate about it. You know, basically saying the issue wasn't ready yet. The Senate passed it late. Hey, this is a big thing. The insurance guys aren't sure whatever. It's not ready yet. Not ready yet. And I'm just so glad that instead of flying to Joplin, standing in audience, which I could have done, and saying the Speaker of the House didn't deliver, and these kids here aren't getting what they're getting, you know, which would have been so easy, so easy, that instead that I picked up the phone and talked to Ron, and the next year we passed it in the first couple of months of the session, and today 1.6 million people are covered by the Autism Mandate, and 3,600 kids this morning went to ABA treatment paid for by the insurance benefit, and it's because Ron taught me the lesson, hey, just calm down, call guys, see if you can get this deal done, and then do the deal, and give everybody else credit.
Can you step outside yourself and think, instead of having to go through the effort of flying to Joplin and have a press conference, if you could have had a Facebook account on your phone, would you have shot a Facebook message off and let him up?
I don't think the method, it was more, whichever method, I mean, I'm aware of Facebook. I don't.
But it's much easier to shoot off a
yeah, but that's not an excuse. Post. That's not an excuse. The fact you can do it quicker is not an excuse for something. I mean, that's like saying, no, I think
let me just ask you a question.
I'm not going to give excuse people because it's easier to be. If it's easier to be snarly, it's not an excuse to be snarly.
Let me ask you a direct question. You worked with Todd Richardson some. You worked with Mike Kehoe quite a bit and Ron Richard. Do you believe Todd Richardson, Mike Kehoe, or Ron Richard are corrupt career politicians?
No. Not at all.
Have you found Ron Richard to be a statesman?
He cares deeply about the state. And any time, as governor, or quite frankly, anytime I dealt with him, that you called on that, the better angel of him, he would listen. He wouldn't always agree. And I think people were unfair to him about right to work. I just think he believes in it. If you're on the border of Oklahoma there, he believes in that issue.
I don't believe he ever sat down with David Humphreys and said, here's a bill and a check. I don't believe that ever
Absolutely
happened.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Do you think people are too quick to throw that word corrupt around?
No, I think there needs to be a healthy... If you're in office with the dwindling resources that the fourth estate has, I mean, you guys got to fire off some. I mean, sure. As far as the press, but as far as a politician, I never said the word, I don't think, Democrat or Republican in a speech was as governor. And I never spent my time saying bad things about people. It just wasn't interesting. I made a decision very early on. If you're governor, you better be able to take people saying bad stuff about you because that comes with the territory. And you better have thick skin. If you don't have thick, you better be a duck in the rain on this deal. You're just gonna go crazy.
Prior to even to the press, prior to I think there's it's, you know, they've been surrounding Ferguson with their own issue. Prior to that, did you feel like you had a fair shake from the press? I'm sure there's stories you'd like to have had written differently, but overall, did you get a fair shake?
I say that the Press Association made a speech. In fact, Vicki Russell came up to me at a funeral 2 weeks ago and said we really appreciate the speech. We thought you were gonna make a speech. I asked to speak to the Press Association right at the end of my term. She said, I thought you were going to come in and tell us all the great stuff you thought you did, but instead you talked about us and our role, which I did. It's an interesting speech. She remembered it, which is a good sign. I was never, that I recall, misquoted. And if there was a quote that was wrong, we called them every time the journalists would fix it. I feel sorry for the press. You guys don't have enough resources. Yeah, I mean, you don't have the information. You got to file Sunshine Law Request to get it. These days, sources are hard to get and to get empowered with them. And it's just rich and dwindling. I mean, back then you had, I mean, the press table couldn't fit everybody. A seat at the press table was hard to get. You had to serve in the Capitol Press Corps for a while before you got into that room, you know, in the Senate. I just think we've got to have a powerful press. And so now I'm not critical of the press. I remember Skip Humphrey told me after I got elected Attorney General, you just got to look at the press in the eye and think not who you're looking at, but that it's a great opportunity to speak to all the people that are reading what they're writing. And I've always tried to show that level of respect to the press. We tried to show respect, but no, I just think there's not enough of you.
Speaking of respect, there's an issue now with the state veterans home. You worked with senators from both parties. Claire McCaskill and Nora Blunt they wrote a letter of concern. I'm sure you got a bunch of those when you were governor.
Not so much. I mean,
various letters.
No, just I'm saying with the senators, so it's a little different. You can look at my record. You don't see letters from me, even sign on letters by governors to our congressional delegation or to our senators saying, do this, do that. And the trade off we got is you don't tell me who to appoint to judges. You don't tell me what to do. I don't tell you what to do. We show each other respect. And I never got letters like that, and I never sent letters like that.
Well, my assumption is you never sent a letter telling them to Google the report or saying what you don't need is career politicians writing meaningless letters.
Not the tone I generally.
Yeah, give me the tone of how does it get that bad? Have you is there other governors you know? Do they have that relationship with their senator?
I don't know. When you start trying when folks are using other people for their own political benefit, then all sorts of things happen. When you're using it's like a bank shot. It's like when I joke about being governor. Governor, there's no straight in shots. Everything's a bank shot. It's like playing a pool game in the league. Like everything's all something. You know, it's not like you just long for these days in which we're going to do this and here's how you do it. Instead, it's like we get this guy to do that and this city to do that and all that sort of stuff. I just didn't join in that. And I think it can get worse if you do, because you can fall prey to what happens a lot in D.C. Which now, if you pick up the paper, it'll be like 16 senators sent a letter. Ooh, wow, that's really big action. How about like filing a bill or? And then they also shifted over into Congress into having all these investigative things. Congress is supposed to pass laws, certainly have oversight, I understand that, but you should have auditors and OIG people and that sort of stuff. And that's one of the trends I see in the Missouri legislature moving the wrong ways, these investigative committees and all that sort of stuff. It's their job to just say, if you got a bill, you got an amendment, that's what your job is. And when you're doing something else you're not qualified for and don't have the staff for, then you lose power.
Let's talk about politics real quick. Let me just ask you the question that if you went and sat on the bench in the Missouri House, you'd hear from a Democrat. Did you do enough to elect Democrats to the legislature in the state of Missouri?
When I was running for governor, yes, I helped a lot. And quite frankly, when I was running, I sat down with every current Democratic member of the House in 2008 during that session. Met with them, my campaign officer 2.5 hours ago through the district. I did 85 fundraising events for folks during the first 2 years. I organized people all over the state. I had a field operation second to none. It was delivering votes for Democrats all over the country, far beyond what Obama's was in 2008, far beyond. Our voter ID, we voter ID'd every person, for example, in St. Peter's.
That's how you won your race, right?
It's one of the things. Yeah, we were, I mean, the day after the 2006 elections, I had 250 people in a conference room at the Ramada Inn in Columbia, in Jeff City, representing basically every county in the state, except Worth. We didn't have somebody from Worth. Small
staff. It's not small than Worth.
Yeah, I know, but we had somebody near it anyway. So I was at that level. And the other thing is, I think I laid out a pretty clear template to where to go as a Democrat.
Did the Democrats not grab an agenda that got more votes for governor than anybody in state history? Did they grab onto that and did enough and effectively politically?
I always thought I laid a pretty clear path forward.
Let me break down the reasons, though. So,
one of the reasons you get smaller numbers, and then folks get more over on the left.
Harder to raise money, less impact.
When you have a smaller number, they're more in essence over on the left side spectrum too. And I never have been the one.
I watched the Jeremy Lefebvre lose a leadership race. To me, that was the night I was like, "Oh, these guys have real problems." I mean, live brain, right. We contributed, could win a leadership race. I was like, wow, this is not that there's a sharp jumping that have to turn. And I think maybe the 2016 election saw some real talent in that caucus. But back to when you were governor. So to me, I have papers in two other states. Democrats in 2010 and 14 were wiped out nationwide. Is there anything you could have done to stem that national trend?
In 10?
Yeah.
It didn't feel like it. And once the other thing is,
would your agenda have even made a difference? So that all across the nation, Democrats were wiped out. What would have been different about Missouri? Mike Beebe in Arkansas, very similar governor to you, he lost a far larger percentage of the legislature than you did. What could he have done?
Skilled politician, too.
Yeah, great skill, governor.
Get some skills. Yeah, good. He won attorney general unopposed. Yeah, either primary or the general. An open seat for attorney general in Arkansas.
Okay. He's like you. He
that
filed.
Guy had been, the guy two before him had been president of the United States. Okay.
Oh, so, it's a similar
I'm just
thing.
Saying, that's hard to tell.
Where Mike Bibby filed, the incumbent senator didn't run either for state senate. Yeah, he was never an opponent.
He's got some skills,
but he couldn't. There was nothing he could do. Was it a national trend?
Sometimes the waves come. Yeah.
There's do you look back in 14 and say, you know, I should have did more? Could you have done anything really?
I think the one thing folks don't understand is that my primary responsibility is to govern the state. And in order to succeed at doing that, I was dealing with the legislature.
I think you mean that. Some people say that, but
absolutely.
I think you mean that.
Yeah, absolutely. And in order to do that, I needed to have it. It didn't. I wasn't the kind of guy, because as Richard said, I don't lie. As it's going to fly down to Ron Richards' district, the day before the election, say, this guy's a bad guy. And then when he wins 2 days later, come to his office and say, oh, yeah, I didn't really mean you're a bad guy. I'm just not that guy. I'm just not. I mean, and so if my rhetoric is not strong enough for the hyper-partisan politics of the day, so be it. My responsibility was, I remember the day I was sworn in. I mean, my mom passed before I was elected to the state senate. She's very close. I mean, people that know me think about my wife, my mom, and my dad. And I remember during the final prayer on the podium, every time there's something important in my life, because my dad was still around, and you didn't have to worry about what he was going to say. He knew he was on me all the time. But I looked down and I thought during the final prayer, you know, what would my mom want me to do? That's why I tried to think every day was an important day. Because when she passed at her funeral, I said, I'm going to remember her every time there's something really important, because I want to have both my mom and dad as part of who I am. And I remember thinking, Scott, like yesterday, she said, the word serve everybody were in my head. And, you know, serve everybody. Don't just serve the Democrats. Don't just serve the Republicans. Don't just serve the people in Jefferson County. Serve everybody. And, I mean, when your mom tells you that after she's passed, you listen. You know, I don't think that was an accidental two words. And I tried to serve everybody. I mean, respect them. I mean, you didn't see me saying bad things about folks. And politically, these days, I was in the evolution, which people went to. I mean, we used to have position papers and press conferences about what our plans were and issues were going to be. I mean, you look at the book of issues when I ran for governor, it's like this thick, our policy book and press conference and all of them, the Missouri Promise, what we're going to do here, what we're going to do there, all this sort of stuff. Meeting after meeting after meeting after meeting. How is this plan actually going to work? None of that stuff happens anymore. Well,
tell me about, you mentioned evolution. Jefferson County is a very interesting microcosm of evolution of the state. It's moved from everyone was a Democrat to no one is. Why? Give me one or two reasons why that happened.
Well, first of all, back just touching Trump, I talked to some other folks, Doyle in Wisconsin last week. I mean, we got to not call these folks Trump voters as much as we should. This is not an anthropology experiment.
But they voted for Donald Trump.
They also voted for me.
Yeah.
So they're Missourians.
Oh, okay.
I've never voted part one either. So Jefferson County, I think that, and the thing that concerns me about the Democratic Party is that we started, that's why I go to here, we started the party of work, of working people, of work, that values work. The dignity of the job was a core value of what the Democratic Party was. And for whatever reason now, we are perceived, I remember driving back from deer camp 2 weeks ago, coming from Iowa border all the way down here, going through these cloudy day, kind of skanky looking, so it looked like a February day in Missouri. And thinking, you know, it's going to take a while to get people back connected because they think the Democrat Party is a party of give stuff out, entitlement party.
Are they today?
That's the view of them. And quite frankly, when you've got a guy getting 49% of the vote saying free everything.
Can the Democrats enter the epicenter of their party in Missouri as the Central West End? Does it got to be bestest for them to win?
Well, I mean, I think you got to. I think the 92 Clinton race, which she said we're going to have a message for everybody in the country. I think that same thing is true right now. There's been so much hyper-analyzation and so much data cutting.
What would be a message that national Democrats have for somebody in Shannon County?
We value work. If people want to get up in the morning, I mean, the Clinton, we're people that work hard and play by the rules. I mean, that work stuff is really important. The Democratic Party has gotten away from being the party of workers and has turned into the view of some people of being the party of handouts. And this country was not built on handouts. Everybody understands you need to have a social safety net. If people get hurt, I think that we have got to get back to the core of being for working folks. And the other thing is, I mean, connect on some value level.
And there's some area. I, as a Midwesterner, as a person from the Boot Hill, when I watch Saturday Night Live after the election and they have a person dressed up as the Democrat, they're clearly all liberals in New York, and they're acting like a funeral because somebody they don't like got elected. That's... How does a Midwesterner connect to something that bizarre?
Oh, you were watching.
And I thought it was bizarre. Yeah, and I think they look down on you, and I think they think they're better. And I think that.
Although, seriously, the number one city in America as far as Seinfeld, the percentage of people watching Seinfeld was St. Louis.
Interesting.
Yeah,
the number one place to watch Duck Dynasty is not Manhattan.
Yeah, that's just interesting. No, I think the Democratic Party's got a real problem. It's a sliver west, a sliver east, and everything else forgotten.
Yeah.
And that won't work. That cannot.
Could Martin O'Malley won the presidency?
No.
Could Joe Biden have won the presidency?
Yes.
Yeah. Absolutely. It was right there in front of me. Why didn't anybody say, hey, guys, she's going to lose. This guy would obviously win. Joe Biden might have won Missouri, you think?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It would have been competitive.
Very competitive.
Were
you in a room where they said, oh, she's got to run, and somebody didn't say, hey, this guy would clearly win and easily? And somebody said, no, we got
to
go with her.
She was able to coalesce things. And plus, Bill's got a long list of folks that,
sure, that makes sense.
She benefited that, and first woman. There's just a lot of historical things going that way, and it's easy to, anybody can design something when we look back at what happened. But
was that hard to see, really? When she got in trouble with the FBI, was it really that hard to see that Joe Biden would win this race and she was going to have? Did you just think Trump will lose no matter what? That to me may be the thought of, you just thought Trump would lose. Let me ask you about something that's different on a different topic.
I think weatherman tell which way it's going to rain.
You're from DeSoto. You ended up being somebody that that wanted the LGB non-discrimination act. How did that, you came to politics at a time where that issue really evolved. Can you share how you evolved on that issue?
It's interesting because you know, I was the only Democrat that was in favor of the constitutional amendment defining marriage as between a man and a woman.
Mm-hmm.
I was on the right or left, however you put the spectrum on some of it. So I was not, and I remember that issue.
Because you think you were with the majority of the state at the time?
It was more of a personal thing for me. I just couldn't get my head around it at the time for whatever reason. I don't know.
Was that wrong?
What? Yeah, it was wrong. It was horribly wrong.
How do you move your head from, I mean, I don't think anybody's mean-spirited. I just think that's the way you're brought up. That's the mental. How did your mind evolve on those issues?
My stepbrother died of AIDS. That was a long time ago. It was very real. And as I became governor and tried to understand the complexity and difficulty of the state even more, I had it all sounds really, when you talk about somewhere you change your position on something that big, it's nice that all of us were about 10 years behind our kids. And I just longer and longer realized we need to bring people together. The issue, I can't even really articulate why I was on the other side of the issue at this point. I mean, mm-hmm. personally, but it's not, I did not analyze it politically at all. I mean, when you're talking about somebody getting married, somebody's personal issue, personal view of themselves, and who they want to love, I mean, that's not really a political position to me. It got political because, you know, the Republicans and Roe guys tried to, you know, divide people on the issue. So it became political because it was used in that sense, my opinion. And even the Democrats were hard for them to deal with it. But I think that the respectful way that the LGBT, an intellectual way that the LGBT community handled those issues was stunning. And I thought the law stuff around it, my star in this guy's incredible. But that doesn't answer the full question. The bottom line is that I've learned that we need to embrace diversity. If we're going to be good Americans, part of being a good American is respecting diversity, really respecting
mm-hmm.
it. You know, that's why this country, one of the reasons this country was formed. And I just came to that position.
Let me ask you about another issue that's particularly in the news now. These boards and commissions, our state has several entities that are set up with boards and commissions. Did you appoint people assuming they'd be independent? Kind of knowing their values, but did you expect them to be independent?
This thing, I mean, it's a side note that won't be in the 75, but we got rid of 975 boards and 970 folks on those boards. So when people say we'd like to get rid of more. Anyway, all boards aren't created equal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
let's talk about
mine safety review board doesn't bring the same level.
We're talking about DESE. We're talking about MoDOT. We're talking about PSC.
I tried to, as governor, deal with those departments through the executive leadership of my colleges.
Mm-hmm.
When I had it, when I had an issue at SEMO, I didn't call Meyer, who I appointed on the board down there. I called Ken Dobbins. So, well, you know, I tried to empower, and I told everybody I appointed those boards, it's your job to love the institution so much you want to make it better, not to love the institution so much you want to micromanage it. So I was more trying to do command and control. So I tried to find people that were not going to be sycophants, that were willing to spend the time. I'm not a guy. We didn't have a bunch of guys calling board members, say vote this way, vote that way, do this, do that. That wasn't the way I played.
In the height, it looks like some of these boards are set up to reflect the will of the people, but make it slower. So there's not the political jumps around. Did you leave? You left some places open, and now someone that may have a different view of the state and its value. Do you regret looking back? You didn't try to fill some of those spots.
Well, we got jammed up. I mean, there's way more appointments than the Senate has time to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
The Senate can deal with about $1.25, about $1.25 each year. That's about all they can do. They only approve about 90 or 95. When you've got 800, that becomes a problem, number one.
But I mean, candidly, you have a DESE department that's been paralyzed for 60 days now. You have Missouri's LIHTC program has been shuttered. Do you look back on the problems that caused and then you should try to fill a few of those?
Yeah, you know, you do the best you can. It, surely I would try to, but we didn't get them through. And if they were interim appointments, they wouldn't have stuck anyway.
I talked to some senators that look back on this, and they were very blunt. They said, you know what, we were probably too harsh on Governor Nixon's appointments, and he probably quit citizen because we were too harsh, thinking that, you know, Governor Koster or Governor Kinder, whoever, we could deal with him. Did you quit sending them because they were rejecting them?
They got tough sometimes. I mean, I remember we had one case where a young man wanted to be on the board of accounts, and he gets nominated, and he gets into the Senate hearing, and they're like, he's just some kid that's got an honor degree and whatnot, and he shows up at it. You know, what's the old Rodney Dangerfield line with the boxing match and a hockey game broke out? You know, I mean, it just was, what am I doing this for? He's got yelling at me. I just, like, I care about accounting, you know, what's, and so it all kind of got like jumpy, and people were hesitant to want to put themselves in that. And then when the Senate switched to wanting to do separate investigations from the governor's investigation than they did on the background stuff, it just lengthened it and made it more difficult. I mean, the Highway Patrol looks at you. We give that report to the Senate. They kind of ought to, like, if they got some other issues they got to look at, fine, but to do it twice, a lot of that stuff was problematic, and so I do think that since the Senate went up and down sometimes, but and then they just decided they weren't going to let some boards be filled through like curators. That kind of was not that wasn't
easy. Couple more questions.
The other thing that people don't understand about the power of governor, having someone on a board that's on a holdover, it's a really nice place to have them, because if they're not supportive of the agenda, then you have a instantaneous remedy.
Then are they independent? Or less independent if they're a holdover?
If you need something, you've got something that's in the back of their head. You know, a holdover is somebody that if they don't vote the way that the organization or institution is going. And there are issues to do that. I remember with the nursing board, we were trying to make sure they had an extra fund balance. One of these guys sweeping it, we were trying to do it for nursing scholarships, which we did. So that's on UMKC and all this sort of stuff. We had a nursing shortage. We took some of their money. They helped us do it. It's nice to have people on the board that will work with you on that. If they wouldn't have, because I was pretty committed to it, we could have found some other people on the board for what's a legitimate.
What's the limit issue of manipulating those boards and still saying they're independent? Let me just talk straight, like we're in West Butler County. Did you ever tell a commissioner, if you don't fire somebody, I'm jerking your appointment back?
No, I didn't, we never got that direct.
Let me ask you just a couple more questions. One about, I was told when you went to Normandy Beach, that was a time when these trips are known for you just ground people in. Legislators love to go until like day two, then they didn't want to be there anymore. I was told Normandy Beach was a special thing.
Well, West Baxter, some sand for back there on my desk. Not only looking down from the top down and thinking about the Americans that died coming up there. If you ever get a chance to go, you just got to go. I mean, just that spot. That's it. That's hallowed ground. And then turn around and see all those crosses. And part of what we did that day was put the wreath on the grave of a fellow from Montgomery City who had passed that day 69 years beforehand, and the local folks heard about it. The local kid, he had made it in. He actually parachuted down and was in a barn and helped free a city, a small French town, and was killed. That's so sad of the story. So it's misty. Richard's there with me. You know, our delegation's there. And it's misty. You got 7,000 crosses, Omaha Beach over here. And these group of people come to me. And it was the mayor of that town that 69 years beforehand, the guy that had died, helped free their town. And he brought with him a group of people, but a seven-year-old girl read a poem in French to us, thanking us for liberating their city and giving them back what they wanted. And I'm saying, which of our kids would remember three generations later to get up on a Sunday to go out and see a politician from another country in the middle of a slight rainstorm and thank us for freeing and to respect the loss of a Missouri citizen there? I mean, if you aren't moved by that sort of stuff, then you should just, I mean, so to, if it's going to be that real to the French, how about we make it real to us? It was an amazing feeling. And I think everybody was almost, that's why I got that sand. We left there. One of the members of detail said, I got to have some sand from the speech. Can I go down there, Gov? I said, sure. I'll act like I'm having a smoke or something behind the bench. I'll act like I'm on my cell phone for a second. The Troy, you run down to the beach and get some sand. And it's in that vial. He went down there and got a vial. He was so moved by it himself that he asked to go down and get. He sprinted down to the beach, filled the thing up with sand, and then gave me and a bunch of other people little boxes of that sand. That's how moved he was. A member of the Highway Patrol, they don't say, Governor, can I leave the detail for a little while here? Go do something. That's a pretty rare talk. That's how moving it was, to give you a sense of that. Yeah, that was a special time.
There's a difference when you talk about Missouri. I mentioned that earlier.
Seeing Lindbergh's bed at the ambassador.
Oh, wow.
He stayed in the ambassador's residence after he hit Paris. And they took me upstairs. There's a bed he slept in. I'm like, okay. You know, it's stuff like that you get to do as Gov.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not.
You love the job, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Love the state?
Absolutely.
You told me about different parts of the state. Does it, you know, each corner of the state. Does it give you a better love for it and its traditions when you get to see that?
Absolutely.
It's a huge state. Most people don't get to see that.
Difficult. You know, Georgia and I are talking about it because we're living in University City here, so it's kind of a hassle for us even to go like to South Lindbergh. You know,
yeah.
You know what I mean? There's traffic. It's a hassle. And then when you come to the office and say, yeah, I see what's going on in Monette. And they're like, what's on Monette? You know?
We live in Missouri or Missouri?
Both. In fact, my first day of the state, you may recall this on
the
Post-Dispatch, but the Post-Dispatch had a tape of it, and they had a ticker running with how many times I said Missouri and Missouri. And I was like 58% Missouri and 42% Missouri. And in my oath of office, the word Missouri is in twice when the governor takes that off. Apparently, without even thinking about it, I said both Missouri and Missouri in the oath.
John Ashcroft did the same thing.
Did he?
Maybe there's no coincidence, you guys.
You don't think about it. If you're a real Missouri, you don't think about it. Some places are clearly Missouri. You just kind of catch the lingo. You go to the Budio, it's
Clayton would be Missouri, I think that's suffice to say.
Yeah. I think it's both.
I mean, last question again. I want to thank you so much for doing this. I've learned a ton of stuff, and I think a lot of other folks have too. But let's say you're a Caleb Rowden or a John Rizzo or Jay Kummel, Bill Eigel, Lincoln Huff, and you're in the fight. Somebody that's had a successful 30-year career serving the state, ended as governor. What's a piece of advice you'd give to them?
Be knowledgeable about what you're talking about. Get an area of expertise that the other members respect you. Be somebody that they can look to and say, no, what's this really mean? Heck with all the speeches. What's that? Remember Dennis Smith and I, when an insurance, after General American went under, we had to pass an insurance and solvency bill. And Dennis Smith was seen as the insurance guy, and I was seen as a trial lawyer guy at the time. And so we're arguing about this provision of the bill, and all once we look around, there's nobody else in the Senate chamber except me and Dennis Smith. And so I said, you know, we can pass whatever bill we want. You know, because they're going to listen because both sides are represented. But we're honest brokers, you know. So I said, let's get this done. So we got done. Having issues that you actually are knowledgeable about and care about is important. I also think the Never Lying starts important, really, really important. And something happened in the Senate when I was relatively young in which somebody was not truthful. And I was so disturbed by it that I went to sit with my preacher. Gene Rooney's passed on, the basketball Mizzou's Methodist preacher there in Jeff City. I don't do this very often. I don't go in for counseling for my preacher very often. And I said, Gene, I'm just having a problem because somebody lied to me. And in the legislature, if somebody lies to you, they can get some benefit from that. They can get a short-term gain, and that ends up being a bill, and something gets done. What do I do? I don't want to lie. What do I do? And he said, Jay, you can't ever forget that people that lie, the prison that they are in is that they have to assume that everyone is lying to them. Because it's in essence the golden rule. If you assume people do what you're doing to them, and think how painful it'd be to live in a life in which you spent your entire life and you couldn't trust anyone. So don't worry about the short stuff. Tell the truth, and in the end you'll get what you want, which is you'll be good with your maker, but you also will live a life in which you have a lot more fun, a lot more freedom, a lot more confidence, and you don't have to, you know. It's one of these moments in my life that has made, so I think long term, not just short term.
Governor Nixon, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks, Scott. See you in a few weeks.